Hello and welcome to The Preservationist, the monthly radio show for fans of local historic architecture, the history of unique buildings, and the people from our community working to preserve and restore them. I'm Astronomus Ray, the president of the board of directors at Lower Columbia Preservation Society, LCPS, and the host of The Preservationist. Thank you for tuning in. Today, we're turning our attention to the Astoria Public Library. The library is more than just a place for books. This building has long been a gathering space, a keeper of local memory, and a reflection of the community it serves. Recently, the library completed a major renovation, a project that carefully balanced historic preservation with the needs of a modern, evolving public space. What does it take to restore a historic library without losing its soul? And how do these kinds of projects help shape a community's future? To help us explore those questions, I'm joined by John Goodenberger and Suzanne Harold, who have been closely involved in the library's restoration and ongoing stewardship. Stay with us as we talk about history, renovation, and why preserving places like the Astoria Public Library matters more now than ever. So, John and Susan, thank you for joining me today. I appreciate you being on the show. I wanted to start off by kind of seeing what your earliest memory of the Astoria Public Library is.
This is Suzanne. Mine will be much newer than John's. My first time in the library was in 2012 when my family was visiting to see if we wanted to move here. And we stopped by to check out the library and my kids played in the children's area for a little bit.
And John?
I've spent the majority of my life in Astoria. And so I started going to the library as a kid. And so certainly I have memories of going through the stacks as a kid. But I also have memories of a little bit later going to rainy day movies there. So the flag room would show films. So that's kind of a memory. And then also just the idea of watching technology change in the library over time as far as what the library offers. There was kind of an experiment of, do you think that people would watch movies if we had movies available for them to watch? And they were handing out reels of film for people to watch at home with the projector. We can see that turn into videos today, or now CDs. So it's just kind of neat to watch the transformation in that way.
When we talk about the Astoria Public Library, more recently, we have gone through this major renovation, and this has been a very long time in the making. This started 12 years ago, is that right?
I would say it started in earnest 12 years ago. My understanding is that conversations about renovating the library go back decades.
Let's just round it off and say 2000.
When we think about what initially sparked the desire to renovate, what were the main things that we started with? Like, what was the main goal of, like, why do we need this project?
I know that the building was built in 1967, and by the last 10 or 15 years, parts of it were failing. So the roof was leaking and needed to be replaced. Plumbing and electricity was getting out of date. And so there was a conversation about, is the library meeting the community's current needs? The library in the city hired Ruth Metz and Associates, which is a library consultant. She did a needs assessment with a lot of community conversations and surveys. That was either going on or wrapping up in the fall of 2012 when I moved here. And from that came the community saying that what they would like is more light, more spaces for gathering, accessibility. We had a library that wasn't accessible if you had any mobility issues, more space for teens and children.
Yeah, I think there was, again, some technological things that needed to happen. I mean, just the simple issue of not having enough plugins.
Yes, and it needed to get updated.
What made it significant to Astoria? This building has been around for a very long time, and it still remains.
So the significance of the building for me is it is the first public library building built specifically for the public library. That's one piece of that. The other piece of that is its association with Ebba Wicks and Ernest Brown. And Ebba was the second woman in Oregon to become a licensed architect through examination. And she was a local woman. She was trained by internationally respected architects, Eliel, if I get the pronunciation right, Saarinen. Saarinen in his time was as well known as Frank Lloyd Wright. And he espoused the kind of the international style of architecture. And she was trained by him. So she has the influence of Saarinen. She has the influence of her father, John Wicks, who started work in Astoria in about 1904, 1905, worked all the way to 1963, was able to evolve his architectural styles through every era. And she's exposed to that, as well as being exposed to this international movement, and she runs with that movement. And her husband, Ernie Brown, runs with that movement as well. He was trained by Saarinen's son. And so we have these people that are trained by international figures, and they're asked to design the library. They didn't choose to go with classic revival. All of the designs were modernistic, because all of the designs in her mind were to move forward, to look forward and not look backward. Look to Astoria's future and not to its past. It's intended to fit in a larger world, not in Astoria specifically, not in its history specifically. And so she took that and she used these designs with very modest budgets and then experimented with materials. So we have people like Frank Lloyd Wright, who experimented with concrete blocks and tried to make houses, and did make beautiful houses from concrete blocks. You have somebody like John Yon, who is from Portland, and he designed with plywood. And I know we all kind of like gasp with that idea, but he made these beautiful structures with exterior plywood. And so here, Ebba comes along and she experiments with these concrete panels. They're inexpensive. You can put up the building easily. You can manipulate the building because you're just hanging these concrete panels from steel structures. And so she's working with what she has to create this building. And so I think that's really significant in the way that she approached the building. And she did that with all of her knowledge that was influenced, again, by these really world-famous folks.
And the architectural style, it's very unique in itself. What is it classified as?
That's a really good question. We've thrown it under brutalist, and I hate the word. I hate the title because I think it's so negative.
Yeah.
And so I choose not to. I just choose to call it international or modernistic or Scandinavian modern or something. But I just hate the word brutalist.
Yeah. Well, and looking at the time frame in which it was built, this was kind of a newer and unique type of architecture. Is that correct?
It was a newer type of architecture. And again, Ebba was looking forward. So we have three buildings on 10th Street, all constructed within about 5-6 years of each other. We have the library, the U.S. Bank, and the Daily Astorian Building, all designed by Ebba and Ernie and Rod Grider and their group. And they were looking at that and saying, hey, folks, this could be the future of Astoria. This is what it could look like. And this is an example. And they took the library and intentionally had the library going out on 10th Street and widened the sidewalk to have an area that would kind of almost be an exterior courtyard for that. And they talked about even just blocking off the street on 10th Street so that you could have people wander around freely without having cars come through. Mm-hmm. So again, it's this whole different concept of the way that Astoria was laid out.
They are very unique buildings when you look at them and you see the character of them. You don't see them everywhere. So I think that's very interesting. Now, with the actual balance of the modern upgrades of what was needed, how did we go about approaching that? You know, when we think about preserving the historical character of the building, we still see the remnants of the original design, but then there's also the modern needs now integrated. How did you go about planning that?
So we reached out to architects for their concept plans of what this could look like. And one of the architectural firms that responded is Henneberry Eddy Architects, based in Portland. And they have a special love and passion for both libraries and for mid-century modern. So they came to it wanting and loving Ebewick's vision and design. And so that's keeping true to that while bringing us forward was integral to their approach. They also went into, they adopted a design theme called the red thread, which is a concept where you look for the essence that links everything together. So they were looking at what is essentially Astoria, and they picked the natural elements that we have. So we have the ropes, and we have wooden buoys. We've got colors that we see around here of the river and the forests and the sunsets. A lot of circles. Those were integral to Native Americans, the Chinese workers that we had here in Scandinavia, and that's just a universal theme. They salvaged the ceiling tiles and the light shades in the main reading room. Most of the corner portion of the children's area is basically salvaged. The original meeting room, flag room that was used for programs is now a staff room and left intact. So they used a balance. John's archives in the basement, those still have the original rough walls.
Yeah, I asked. Please don't make it too fancy.
Yes. Yeah, and that in itself is also a great project in the basement. You have been organizing a lot of historical documents. And
so I teach at the college in the historic preservation program, and beginning around 2015 or so, my students and I, with members of the public, went into the basement to start to archive many of the documents that have been donated to the library over the years. And now we have a nice bright space for those documents. And we have a place that people can come and do research. And before, not only was it a dark space, which had its own mood and its own appeal, you know, but now it's accessible, so that everybody can come down into that space and use it. And it's also adjacent to the flag room.
Oh, nice.
So that essentially I can drag things out of the archives and pull them into the flag room and talk with a larger group of people about what artifacts might be. And it's a bit off topic, but I'll tell it anyway. I've been leaving the door open as I've been in there working, because I'm still getting things lined up, you know, as I get them on their shelves and that sort of thing. I've been leaving the door open and letting people wander in as I am in there working. And some people are just excited to see an old book. Others are really interested in the depth of the archives and what we have there. And there was a group of students that came in that were there because they're going to put an art project up for Art Walk. And they wandered in and kind of wondered what was going on. And I said, would you like to hold a 160-year-old book? And I gave them a book to hold and feel. And you could feel the leather binding around it and know that that's very different. And it had tooling on it and had weight to it, and you open it up and the print is almost embedded into or impressioned into the paper, and the book has this generic Encyclopedia Britannica scent to it. And I said to them, you know, reading, it can be a tactile experience. It always used to be, and you don't necessarily get that. In fact, you don't get that from Kindle. And so we can provide through the archives yet one more piece of an experience for people, and it's a tactile experience.
And it's open and accessible for the public for their research and everything.
By appointment, yes.
By appointment, there, that's the important piece.
I will jump in and add, on the other side of the archives is the Astoriana Local History Room, which
right.
used to just be a corner of the room. So that is also open by appointment. You can come in. And we are in the process of training up a volunteer so that we can have drop-in hours starting in, hopefully, February. She can show people how to use the microfilm, open up the cabinets for local history books, help people with reverse directories if they want to research past owners of their homes, that kind of thing.
Oh, very nice. Great. That's great that we have that, because I know there's lots of people that have that interest, and it's hard to figure out where the starting point is when you don't know. We'll return to our interview with Suzanne Harold and John Goodenberger talking about the Astoria Public Library renovation in just a moment. But first, I'd like to invite you to this month's Topics in Preservation. Topics in Preservation is a monthly conversation and discussion hosted by the Lower Columbia Preservation Society, LCPS. Join us on Wednesday, February 18th at 6 p.m. at the LCPS headquarters on 591 12th Street in Astoria, Oregon. This month's Topics in Preservation is hosted by my fellow board member, Eric Wheeler, affectionately known as the Architect Hound. Enjoy a night through the years of his engaging articles on nearly 50 remarkable buildings in the Lower Columbia region. This event promises a delightful blend of snappy contemporary and vintage photos, accompanied by witty commentary on each building's architectural flair and historical charm. With the Lower Columbia Preservation Society's generous support, this event is free and open to all. Other LCPS events happening are LCPS Presents. Join us in March for our lecture about early fur trade. LCPS Presents is a free monthly lecture series about local history and historic preservation hosted at the Pacific Distillery on 55 4th Street in Astoria, Oregon. Join us on Tuesday, March 10th at Pacific Distillery. The lecture begins at 7 p.m., but be sure to arrive early for seating. This event is free and open to the public with food and beverages available for purchase. For more information, be sure to visit www.lcpsociety.org. We hope to see you there. Now, returning to our interview with Suzanne Harold and John Goodenberger talking about the Astoria Public Library renovation. When we look at what historic preservation actually means in the context of a public library, how does it differ from preserving other types of buildings, such as residential? Is there a major difference when you go about looking at the historic preservation of this versus others?
You know, we're preserving a public space, and we're doing it with public funds, so there's that issue. And the public was really clear about the types of services that they needed and the quality of space that they wanted. The difference is that there's maybe more voices in a public restoration, and then you also have to get this buy-in for it as well. And preserving a building, regardless of the user, requires one to look at the building's character, as Suzanne was talking about, and look at the character-defining features and make sure that they're respected, if not retained. And so the renovation did retain those volumes and the sleekness and the overhead fixtures, etc. And I guess I would also add that I don't see historic preservation as kind of a backward-looking profession and ideal, like, let's go back to the past because everything was so much better then. There is a certain aspect to that, but it's way more than that. And I see it as a platform to build our future. And we start by grounding ourselves in history and use the architecture to remind us where we came from. And by preserving the buildings, we can maintain this kind of stability in our surroundings. I can go back to my childhood and know this building. And that's important to me because I need that kind of stability in my life. When everything else is changing, the architecture can and a public space can bring that stability. What we also do is to retain materials. Rather than just throwing them away and starting over, we retain original building materials. And that's important because many of our building materials are becoming more and more scarce. And here we can retain them. And they're all also of high quality. And we can do it with a broader view of energy efficiency because so many of our buildings, our historic buildings, were constructed when we didn't have gigantic HVAC systems. And they were constructed when they were just naturally green. And I understand that the library was built after that period.
Yes.
But in a larger scale, we can look at our historic structures and make them more energy efficient, rather, with just a few changes. And finally, you know, historic preservation, whether it be a public building or a private building, I do it to support the economy. the way that we do that is preservation places more money in the hands of craftspeople than new construction. New construction places money in materials. Drywall and vinyl don't vote. They don't pay taxes, and they don't serve on local boards, and they don't support local bond issues. Craftspeople do. And that's why I truly believe that we need craftspeople in this area, craftspeople doing historic preservation and investing in our buildings and investing in our community.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, because it's important to have this continue because people need to know how to actually preserve it when it comes down to it. What do you hope people maybe visiting decades from now experience or feel from the library?
I hope that when they come into the library decades from now, they know that they are in the Astoria Library, that it still has that sense of Astoria. You could not pick up this design and this approach and drop it in, say, the Midwest or another country. It would feel off. It is specific to our history and our culture. I hope that they come in and see a community that is using the space dynamically and enthusiastically, and that it's been able to adapt to the changing needs and desires of the community. One of our main watchwords during the renovation was flexibility, so that as we go forward, we have a space as flexible as possible. One of the strengths of libraries over thousands of years has been the ability to look and identify what a community needs and provide that, whether those are scrolls or reel-to-reel tape or now streaming services and community spaces to meet together.
And what role do you hope the library will play in the future of Astoria?
It has a few roles. One is to help people educate themselves, find out information that they need, to access resources that we need. We provide computers for people who don't have access at home, printing, scanning, and copying services. There's been, epidemic seems strong, but that word's been used, of loneliness in our country, of people feeling disconnected from each other. And I feel like one of the vital roles that the library can provide is a neutral third space for people to come together and make interpersonal connections with each other and feel more grounded and woven into their community.
Were there any surprising or interesting stories or maybe history uncovered during the process of the renovation? Was there any hidden gems?
There were a few unexpected adventures. One, we learned just how close the water table is to the floor of the basement when we dug the elevator shaft. So they did a lot of that work in hip waders as they got it dried out, and also discovered that some of the foundation under the building was made with large timbers that were placed horizontally. And over the years, as the water table rose and fell and rose and fell, that started to rot. So we had rotting organic matter under the library that we had to mitigate. That was one of them. One thing that was not a surprise, but might surprise listeners, is those precast concrete panels that John mentioned are not actually load-bearing. As he mentioned, they're kind of suspended there. So they look really strong and like they're holding everything up, but they're kind of more decorative. And then the architect noted that some of the interior walls, they were framed with open web metal studs and tracks and held together with wire ties rather than screws. So I did hear the architects and general contractors talking over that. That was a big surprise. Do you have more to add?
I don't know that I necessarily have more to add. I think that's a pretty good list. The issue of the foundation, that's been an issue all over downtown, where buildings were constructed on the piles that were once there, and like, oh boy.
And you don't find out those things until you start doing a project, right?
No.
There's no way. Yeah.
No, that's the adventure of working on an existing building.
On a personal level, what does it mean to you to be a part of preserving a place that holds so many stories? Because both of you guys spent a lot of time and energy in this. And actually, not even just you guys. There was a whole team of people.
This was the work of an incredible team. My staff, the city itself, the community, the architects, and all the contractors and general contractors, John. I was ticking through my head a while back and realized that every single department in the city of Astoria supported this renovation in some form or another. So for me, it's an incredible milestone. Most library directors don't get a chance to oversee a renovation. And it's watching people come back to the library and seeing the new space space and being excited just brings a lot of joy that I was able to help make this happen in the community.
For me, I knew Ebba and I knew Ernie, and I felt a certain obligation to them that their work should be honored. And I had those kinds of conversations with the architects saying, you know, I do feel personally responsible for this, right or wrong. And so, you know, please, please be careful. And they did a wonderful job. And then during the opening, it was so rewarding to be in a building filled with people, Astorians specifically, who were happy, who were thrilled to be in a building and excited about the future, excited about the changes. That was super cool. And then, you know, I was down in the archives and somebody said to just let it out to no one in particular, the world, who knows, about the archives. And he just said, can you imagine being surrounded by history every day and being able to work here? And I thought, that is super rewarding for the work that we have done over these years.
Is there anything that you wish more people knew about the library's history or the architecture that maybe not everybody knows, anything that we haven't talked about yet?
One of my favorite stories, it's not connected to the architecture so much, but the library was officially incorporated in 1892. But the first attempt was actually in 1877, when the Good Templars Association created a public reading room with the sincere conviction that if they provided a space to read, the men of Astoria would go there rather than to the bars to go drink. And within 6 months, they'd given up on that idea and they'd moved pool tables into the room. And I just feel it's so perfectly Astorian. I love that story.
Any other stories, John?
Well, the location of the library is not by accident. It's not just random. That site was selected in the 1940s. And it was 20 years before that building was constructed. And it was this multi-decade dream anyway before then. And it started long before the 40s, but like any civic project, it had to gain the community's support and it had to gain financial support. That was, of course, critical. And when John Jacob Astor V came along and donated $100,000, that was a big uptick. But what was also critical was formulating a vision for the community, and it fulfills the social needs, educational, emotional, civic, as well as kind of an aesthetic experience. And even though the site was selected in the 1940s, that didn't mean the public was ready to accept that site. Is there someplace less expensive? Will someone donate a building for us instead of us having to pay for it? What about if we built on the waterfront? What about if we built up on the hill? And this is in the 1960s and 50s. And these issues were debated again and again. And in the end, it was decided that being downtown at that location had an advantage.
Thank you both so much for joining me on this episode of The Preservationist and sharing about the wonderful Astoria Public Library and that project.
Thank you so much for the chance to talk about the library.
I'm Astronomus Ray, here with
Suzanne Harold
and
John Goodenberger.
Thank you for listening to this month's episode of The Preservationist. We hope you tune in again next month. The Preservationist airs every third Tuesday of the month at 9:30 a.m. on KMUN. I'd like to give a special thanks to the team here at KMUN, the staff, members, and volunteers of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society, and a special thanks to Camilla Swerdloff for producing the theme song of The Preservationist. The Preservationist is a production of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society for KMUN, written and produced by Astronomus Ray. And remember, when it comes to preservation, anyone can be a preservationist. Until next time, I'm Astronomus Ray. Thank you for tuning in.